guys, and welcome to a new episode of Nerds Talk Movies. My name is Taylor Cole, and I will be your host today. We are on number 64 of this fine podcast. It might not be a good podcast.
I don't know. I think it's always good. Anytime I'm there, it's good.
It's all right. It's definitely in the top 1,000 podcasts.
Oh, for sure. Maybe. Definitely.
We're taking a short break from the Marvel stuff and the retrospectives this week. Instead, we'll be hosting our first Clash at the Stash episode for Nerds Talk Movies.
Hell yeah, we are.
If you listen to the Nerd Stash show's Resident Evil versus Soulsborne episode, you pretty much got the gist of how this thing works. So if you want to skip ahead to the specifics of this particular installment, check out the timestamps in the description. Alright, here we go. Clash at the Stash was an old staff collaboration series over at thenerdstash.com, where two of our writers would debate over two nerd culture topics and make a case why their pick was better. At the end of each installment, we would have three judges determine the winner based on what was said and how entertaining the competitors were. Even though this series was for entertainment purposes only, we actually tracked wins and losses and even had a championship edition of Clash at the Stash. Some of our old installments included topics like the Mario franchise versus the Zelda franchise, Uncharted versus Tomb Raider, the Star Wars prequels versus the Star Wars sequels, so on and so forth. We're rebooting this series as a monthly series in podcast form, so all of our topics are back on the table, and we have a lot of future ideas that we can't wait to get into. Now it's time to get into our episode for today, which is actually a little different compared to any other episode we've ever done of this thing. It's actually a lot different. Instead of just debating over two established topics, like Resident Evil or the Soulsborne games, we're going to be thrust into the shoes of a Hollywood screenwriter who is tasked with giving a DC exec one hell of a movie or series idea. I will be one of those screenwriters. And just a note, I'm already 0-1 heading into this thing, so I'm really banking on a win here. Like, I'm not saying this is a must-win scenario for me, but it kind of feels like that. Across from me this week, you've heard him throughout this whole episode.
Oh, yeah,
is my fellow co-host, Tristan Benz. Tristan, how are you feeling? And I'm just going to go ahead and answer this question for you. Are you pretty confident?
Oh, yes, Taylor. Sweet, innocent Taylor. You're already coming in here with an L. I'm coming in with an undefeated record. You know, I have yet to lose.
I haven't done anything.
I am the once and future king of the Clash. I will now only respond to the king for the duration of this episode until... And, well, I shouldn't say until, because it's not going to happen. But in the event that I lose, I will then go back to responding to Tristan. But let's be honest, that's not going to happen. Because if there's one thing that Tristan knows, it's DC. And if there's another thing that Tristan knows, it's what DC's doing wrong with its movies. And I'm the man. I am just the man, the mind, the myth, the legend to come in with just a fucking hot fire DCEU pitch. And that's what I'm going to do today. I'm doing that not just for me, but I'm doing it for the audience. I'm doing it for the people. I'm the people's king. All right? You take that to the bank.
Tristan's playing the heel in this episode.
Goddamn right I am. High heel. Okay. 6-inch pumps. Louis Vuitton. Red bottom shoes.
Oh,
what up?
My God. This is going to be terrible. I can't wait.
Let's go.
But here's the thing also. We're going to keep our ideas what we think is somewhat reasonable for DC to do. We don't want it to be like a completely fan fiction kind of thing. We want to kind of have it in a realm of a possibility. So
we want it to feel organic. We want it to feel organic.
Yes, that's what we're going for here. So hopefully it comes across that way. But that just leaves who will be judging our ideas.
Who's going to play
this DC executive, so to speak? Joining us for this ridiculous episode is a voice you have heard before on his podcast. He joined us to talk about James Gunn's The Suicide Squad, and now he will be the one to decide which one of us has the better DC idea. Andrew Marlowe, welcome back to the show. How are you doing?
I appreciate y'all having me back. I'm doing fantastic. Just got off work from the comic book store. Hell yeah. I am ready for this first edition of Fan Fiction Throwdown.
I love it. I love it. I'm here for it. I'm excited. Glad to have you back. If there's one person who knows DC as much as I do, it's Andrew. So I'm very excited that we managed to snag him to be the judge of this episode.
Trish and I have a whole Discord with friends where all we do is bitch about DC.
And all we do is bitch about DC Comics. And it's not even just a Discord about specifically DC, but it just comes to be that.
It just becomes always, that every other day.
They're honestly. Just always doing some dumb shit, you know?
This is
they're,
true.
They're always up to something.
I feel like I'm at a disadvantage here, but I'm just going to move on. I'm going to keep this next part as short as possible.
It's about who you know, Taylor.
It's Hollywood, baby. I just wanted to give the listener an idea of what they can expect from this episode. The format of the episode, at least. Here we go. We'll start the clash with our opening statements. Basically, the competitors will share a basic premise of what their pitch is, why they personally decided to go in that direction, and or a cast. They can also include a potential director or showrunner as well, but that part is completely optional. The contestants will then make their respective cases. Basically, they're just pitching their DC movie or series idea to both you, the listener, and Andrew Marlowe. If it's a movie, you can go through your idea for what the story will look like and some character arcs. If it's a series, you can go through your idea for the first season. Sequel baiting or teasing future seasons is all right. You can do that. After one competitor is done making their case, the door is open for the other competitor and the judge to talk freely about it. These can be compliments, questions, or any problems you had with it. We will then move on to the next competitor, rinse and repeat the same process. When both competitors are done with their cases, the judge will then have a few categories, or questions, depending on time. We're kind of on the clock today. Also, the competitors don't know what these categories or questions are. That way, each competitor will have to rely on the content we already have prepared, and the ability for us to speak off the cuff about topics.
It's my specialty.
Depending on how detailed a competitor's case is, there may be some repetitive comments from time to time too, so be prepared for that. Next, the competitors will have one final chance to make a plea to the judge with their closing statement. To bring this back to our Daredevil retrospectives, we will have to pull out our best Foggy Nelson or Matt Murdock impressions here. After the closing statements, the judge will make their final verdict on who they think won based on what was said and how entertaining they were. As I briefly mentioned before, Clash at the Stash is just meant as an entertainment purposes only kind of deal. Like, look at the topic we have here, everybody. This is ridiculous. So
we're making the real decisions here. It's
if
not
you want to bash our ideas or compliment us or even pitch your own, we'd love to hear from you. Also, since this is just an entertainment thing, there is a bit of room for personal bias from our judge, but in the end, just try to keep an open mind and call it down the middle. Because of the relationship between Tristan and Andrew, I want to repeat this.
Hey, here's the thing. I am a man of honor, Taylor. I have not told Andrew my pitch. I have told him nary a thing. In fact, I walked away from an easy dub of a pitch because I knew the dub would be too easy. I knew it's right up Andrew's alley. We've talked about it before. I know it just gets him where he needs to go in terms of DC content. So I said, you know, let me roll up my sleeves. Let me take a step back and let me challenge myself to come up with something unexpected that I still think will secure me the bag, but won't put you at too much of a disadvantage.
Andrew, I'm still going to repeat this. There is a bit of room for personal bias. But please, try to call this down the middle.
I have no loyalty to friends, old and new. I am looking at my investors, my four quadrant
exactly.
Pitches. I am DC Feige. That means Detective Comics Feige over here. And I want to know how way we can get China to watch this movie. How can I get your mom to know what Wakanda has been in a DC sense? How can I make money off your idea and probably take all the credit?
That's the energy I want to hear. That's what I like to hear from an executive. That's what I like.
2 weeks working on the set of Doom Patrol taught me.
Got him. Oh, man. You love it. You love to see it.
I have so many questions to ask you off air. But finally, the winner of the Clash of the Stash will close out the show. Is everybody ready?
Oh, yeah. You bet your cheeks. I'm ready.
Tristan, let's start with your opening statement. And Andrew, I'm going to pass off hosting duties to you going forward. Please don't make me regret this. or at least until we know who won this thing.
It's all about money, baby.
Just so the whole episode flows a little bit better. So,
heard.
The floor is yours as the host. Tristan, take it away with your opening statement.
Well, my opening statement comes from the back of a little graphic novel. It will be the tagline for my film. It'll go right on the poster. Andrew, this may do something for you, Taylor. I doubt you'll care about it. But take half a dirty dozen, and you get the secret six. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. I am here to pitch you on a secret six cinematic entry to the DCEU. Now, some may ask, what is the secret six? It's why the people like the Suicide Squad. Now, John Ostrander's Suicide Squad run in the 80s? A banger. But these DC movies, they're pulling also a lot from the Secret Six. It's criminals, it's family, it's mischief, it's chaos, it's violence, and it's the next entry in the DCEU under my supervision.
Beautiful, beautiful. I would like you to elaborate further on this, but I would like to go ahead and move my way to Taylor's opening statement. What do you have for me, sir?
Tristan, do you have a cast, by the way?
Oh, I have a cast, yes. Rest assured.
Okay, Tristan, so you're saving the cast for the actual
I'm saving the cast for the actual pitch. And I've also got a director and a writing team, so rest assured.
Right, I'll start. I got this. Judge Marlowe, or Executive Marlowe, I guess, and our esteemed listeners, when Disney Plus was being formed, the Mouse House decided to load their slate up with a ton of new movies and shows exclusive to the service. But their platform was initially backpacked by one lone series from their Star Wars catalog, The Mandalorian. Every Friday during the show's run so far, The Mandalorian would dominate social media and nearly every entertainment publication out there. While it kind of caters to the hardcore Star Wars fanbase, it's still a show that could be loved by everyone. I'm talking casual fans, younger fans, older fans, etc.
It's true, we do like The Mandalorian.
HBO Max has a lot of upcoming content to look forward to, don't get me wrong, but it still doesn't have that one exclusive project, like The Mandalorian, to hook DC comic viewers in for weeks on end. Doom Patrol is excellent, but it's kind of for a niche crowd. And Titans? Well, it's Titans. So here's what I'm going to pitch today. A premium week-to-week series with one of the most popular properties in entertainment history. One that caters to a more mature audience while still managing to somehow appeal to people of all ages. You know, just like The Mandalorian does. What is this popular property, you may ask? Well, I think we all know. The most popular superhero in comic book history, other than Spider-Man and probably Superman. We're talking about the Dark Knight himself, Batman. Here's my cast for this series, which is simply called Nightfall. David Castaneda as Jason Todd. Castaneda plays Diego in the Umbrella Academy. I have Daniel Webber as Avatar. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. I did some research on this, okay? It's loosely based on what you think it is.
My man came prepared.
But Webber played Lewis in the Punisher Netflix series and Lee Harvey Oswald in the limited time series 11/22/63.
Okay.
Jack Coleman as Jim Gordon. Coleman played Noah Bennett in Heroes.
Oh, he would be a good Gordon. I did a Heroes rewatch recently. He's got those glasses. I mean, he just needs the mustache, and he'd be a killer. Shit, you're trying to sell me on this pitch. Damn.
Alternatively, I did have John Schneider here, but Schneider's so famous for his role as Jonathan Kent in Smallville, and I was like, I don't want to ruin that.
You don't want to muddy the waters.
Next up, I have one of my favorite picks, honestly, here, which is Luke Arnold as John Paul Valley, a.k.a. Asriel. Arnold played John Silver in one of the best TV shows ever made, Black Sails.
It's a pretty good show. He'd be a good Asriel. It's a really good show. You watch Black Sails, Andrew?
I've never seen it.
Oh, man. Let's take a pause real quick from The Clash. I think, is it still on Hulu, Taylor? Do you know?
It is definitely on Hulu.
Oh, man. You got to check out Black Sails, bro.
I'm adding to the list, man. Yeah, it's there.
It's good shit.
Next up, we need our big bad. We need Bane.
Oh, we need
And Bane. I have Kirk Acevedo playing Bane. He played Jose Ramsey in the 12 Monkeys series, Ricardo Diaz in Arrow, and a ton of other notable TV shows, including Band of Brothers. Alternatively, I do think Dave Bautista would crush it in this role, but I'm not trying to just be like, yeah, well, get this big name actor and get this big name actor. So, gonna go with Kirk Acevedo here. He would crush it. Next up, we also need a Robin. And this is where I feel like this is going to be the pick that everybody either loves or hates. And that is Mena Massoud as Tim Drake, a.k.a. Robin.
Okay.
He played Aladdin in, well, the Aladdin movie in 2019. Ooh. By the way, I know this one could draw some eyes and some dumb controversy talk. I'm not suggesting Massoud for those headlines. I'm suggesting him because of two things. He's a damn good actor, and also, he knows his Batman lore. The dude's a massive fan. I think he wants to play Nightwing as well, but I have somebody for Nightwing. Next up, I have Holland Roden as Barbara Gordon, aka Oracle slash Batgirl. Roden played Lydia in Teen Wolf, the series, and Aaron in Mayans MC. Now, why did I pick Holland Roden? I think she's a great actress, but I wanted to pair her with somebody who she has chemistry with as Nightwing. And that is Dylan O'Brien as Dick Grayson, aka Nightwing. Dylan O'Brien played Styles in Teen Wolf, the series, and Thomas in the Maze Runner franchise. Which leads me to the main character, to Bruce Wayne himself. And that is going to be Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
Okay.
Jeffrey Dean Morgan plays Negan in The Walking Dead. He also had a lot of other memorable roles in The Watchmen, the movie, Supernatural, The Losers, and more. By the way, The Losers is pretty underrated as far as action movies go. It's pretty fun. He also briefly played Thomas Wayne in Batman vs. Superman, but it seems we'll never get to see him as Thomas Wayne, so why not just cast him as an older Bruce Wayne?
All right, all right. I'm liking how this is shaping up.
I like to just point out real quick that Tristan, you have fat competition just from that Jeffrey Dean Morgan casting.
Well, I'm sure
that is a automatic green light in Mr. Moneybag's eyes over here.
Well, see, here's the thing. Had I known we were allowed to just do our cast right with our initial, like, you know, opening statement, you know, I would have gone with it. But that seemed like nitty gritty. That seemed like something we have to go into the actual pitch for. So I'm not saying that Taylor's cheating by using his knowledge of the rules.
I did include it in both the rules of this and everything I said before.
Well, Taylor, I can't read. So
this sounds like
a
salty Tristan who wasn't prepared.
I tell you what. I'm always prepared, except for when I'm not. And, you know, it's fine. It's fine. See, I didn't want to go right into my cast because it's a whole lot. But see, now I feel like I got to go into it. I got to go into it right now. I don't have a choice.
Let me finish my opening statement.
No, finish. I'm just going to go ahead.
I just want to explain the why behind this. Because I think the why is important. So a lot of people probably listened to the name of this proposed series and its cast and immediately knew where I was going with this. Those people would be somewhat right. This series, at least in the first season, would be loosely based on the somewhat controversial Nightfall storyline, with just a small mix of Batman Beyond. This series would solve a lot of problems, I believe, for DC Studios, including it would finally free other DC properties from becoming Gothamized. Don't get me wrong, almost everybody loves Batman, but a lot of people are also getting really tired of seeing shows like Titans and potentially movies like The Flash become way too obsessed with The Dark Knight. Nightfall would be a premium HBO Max series where you could freely do all sorts of Bat Family stuff without diminishing other beloved DC characters or the greater DCEU. I'm talking Justice League stuff, the Batgirl movie, all that stuff. So it wouldn't have to mesh with any of that stuff. You would get another Batman show without it really being a Batman show. I'll explain it later whenever I get into my actual idea, but other than just the first episode, there would be no actual Batman. Bruce Wayne is physically unable to continue. He will be in a wheelchair for season one and need a cane in any future seasons. Kind of like the Bruce Wayne we see in Batman Beyond. Instead, the basis of this series would deal with the legacy of the Batman and the power vacuum it leaves in its wake, while everybody's trying to also find their own way forward.
Okay. Beautiful, beautiful. Okay, that is a strong contender.
That is a very strong contender.
In a little bit of a transitionary period between the pitches going, I want from both of you a one-sentence log line that you would pitch this in, like an elevator pitch sort of sense.
I mean, I feel like I dropped mine right at the beginning, you know? Take a half dirty dozen, you get a secret six. DC's greatest Z-list villains in one strike team.
Standing by that one strong, I see.
Yeah, damn right I am.
Taylor, if you cornered me at a convention in an elevator.
You cornered him. You're sweaty.
I had nowhere to go. My assistant got caught outside. All the sweaty fans. I am in back the corner of an elevator. Let's say the Marriott in Atlanta, just to keep it local for me.
Let's say you have me
with a notepad and a pencil, and you give me one sentence before I call security. What do you have for me?
That's a great question. And if it's not like a synopsis, you just told me to pitch this to you. It's that Nightfall would be HBO Max's version of The Mandalorian, a premium HBO Max series that could draw everybody in and have people every whatever night it would air on talking about it for the entire week, waiting for that next episode. You see how people love Baby Yoda? You see how everybody can't wait for shows like Falcon and the Winter Soldier or WandaVision or Loki to come back on? You see how it always trends on Twitter?
I can kind of wait for WandaVision to come back, I'll be honest.
I will accept that run-on compound sentence as I wave you away with security, but that will stick in my brain as a nut, an acorn, if you will, of an idea that I will pitch as my own in a boardroom. Now I would like to move on to the proper, the nitty-gritty, the treatment. Tristan, we'll start with you. I have invited you to a tiny water bottle meeting on my Warner Brothers lot.
Is it Dasani or is it Deer water Park? Bottles.
Oh, Dasani. Every day. I'll cheap out.
Okay.
You are set in a long table. That's the most offensive
thing we've ever said on this show.
White room. Batman, Superman, comic pages all over to pretend that I'm a fan, but it's actually me. I give you... At first, I want to give you a minute, and then we'll go on from there. Give me your pitch for the Secret Six.
You can tell that Andrew's a DM in Dungeons and Dragons. Okay.
This is true. Year and a half going strong, baby.
All right. If I only got a minute. All right. Now you may say, why do we need the Secret Six? We've already got the Suicide Squad. And I say to you, Secret Six is the Suicide Squad done right. These aren't going to be your typical villains who, hey, you know, they're not really bad guys, and maybe they learn to save the world and be heroes at the end because they found a family. No, these people are pieces of shit. But guess what? They're fun, they're entertaining, they're sexy. You know why they're sexy? Because, yeah, we're bringing back Will Smith's Deadshot, but guess who's playing Catman, Andrew? Guess who's playing Catman? Oscar goddamn Isaac. All right?
You have me impressed, and I stop you mid your minute. I say your time limit is done. You may go on without a limit. I have my assistant scratch a note. Oscar Isaac equals dollar sign.
There we go. Exactly.
No time limit.
Then who's playing Scandal Savage, you may ask? Sophia Boutella. I think that's how you pronounce it. I'm never quite clear on it, but she just got cast in Zack Snyder's Rebel Moon. I'm very excited.
I was about to say, Rebel Moon's own Sophia Boutella?
Yeah, exactly. She's fantastic. Who's playing Bane? Well, that's Laz Alonso from The Boys fame. Okay? He's Cuban, so it's fine. All right? You people can't be all like, oh, well, you know, it's race bending. The fuck out of here. Bane, to my knowledge, he's from Santa Prisca. It's a fictional, you know, Latin American nation, so he can be any color. It doesn't matter. But then, Andrew, you may ask, who's Ragdoll? You can't have the Secret Six without Ragdoll. And you can't have Ragdoll without Doug Jones. You know?
Oh, good God.
You know?
Sir, I didn't realize this was an adult-rated podcast because you were speaking some dirty words into my ear right
now. Oh, you know I am. Because then who's playing Jeanette? Karen Gillan. We got Karen Gillan as Jeanette, and that's our core Secret Six. But then, then you may ask, well, who are we putting this ragtag group of ne'er-do-wells against? Well, they're going to go up against one Vandal Savage, Andrew. One Vandal Savage, the immortal caveman mastermind, played by Javier Bardem. Yeah. Ooh. Chew on that for a second.
Javier Bardem. Dune's Stilgar own himself.
Stilgar of the Fremen himself. We got Javier Bardem. All right. And then, you know, we got Mockingbird in the film. Not the Avenger Mockingbird, but the Mockingbird who's the kind of the mastermind behind the Secret Six. I'll save that casting for later in the pitch, because that's a little bit of a spoiler. That's a fun little nugget. Ooh. For all you fans out there. But, you know, Vandal Savage, he's going to need some assistance, you know, going up against the Secret Six, you know? He's only one man, immortal though he may be. So that's when you bring in characters like Cheshire and Deathstroke, played by Maggie Q, and the return of Joe Manganiello.
Ooh.
Yeah.
We were losing money on taking him out of his contract, so I approve of the Joe Manganiello.
There will be some other random villains in there, you know, that we'll see. You know, we got Mad Hatter, we got, you know, Tarantula, we got a Parademon, you know, left over from Zack Snyder's Justice League. But the important question that I can feel on the tip of everyone's tongue is, who's directing this film? That's Deadpool's own Tim Miller. With a script by myself, obviously, and James Gunn and Gail Simone. You can't have the Secret Six without bringing in Gail. Who knows these characters better than she? Certainly not I. You know, not James, not Tim Miller. Okay? We got to bring in Gail Simone for this treatment. All right? She's got to get in on the ground level. She's going to get down to the nitty-gritty of the heart of these characters, just like she did in the comics. And she's going to make people give a damn. Not because it's the, oh, you know, maybe we can reform us. No, because we're pieces of shit, but we're still fun. And we're sexy, like Oscar Isaac. Side note for all you people out there, Catman, bisexual. You want to see Oscar Isaac? Some hot homoerotic tension with Will Smith? I know I do. You know? Who don't want to see that? Who don't want to see that?
That's oddly specific.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, it's going to get some butts in the seats, Taylor. You know?
This is part of his pitch, apparently.
Sure, you got Jeffrey, I mean, hey. Yeah, Andrew, you've read Secret Six, haven't you?
I've actually not read the full.
Oh, movie. Man. Okay, well, did you read the part where there's the kitchen scene and they're both shirtless and they got a gun and a knife pointed at each other?
Many, many times.
Exactly. That's what we need to replicate. That's what we need. So, let me get to the actual, you know, I've stacked the cast. I had to overcompensate because I missed the chance to say the cast in the first place. But let me tell you what's happening with the Secret Six storyline. So, the movie starts. Bam! We're right in the action. We got the Secret Six. They're in the middle of a firefight with an army of mercenaries and random supervillains, you know, like Multiplex and the Mad Hatter. We're just throwing all the randos in there. You thought the Suicide Squad had some deep cuts in there? Fuck that. We're getting right up in there. So, it cuts back, you know, because we start an intermediate rest, but it cuts back these five criminals. You say, now it's called the Secret Six, not the Secret Five. Well, I got a reason for that. Five criminals wake up in a single cell, no memory how they got there. You got Deadshot, you got Catman, you got Ragdoll, you got Jeanette, who, for those unfamiliar, Jeanette, she's a Hungarian banshee. And then you got Bane. You got big old Bane himself, all right? Now, they're instructed by this mysterious figure who captured them. He shows up on the screen called Mockingbird. And it's like, hey, you all work for me now, okay? Now, if you don't do the mission, I'll kill you. And you may say, what separates us from Suicide Squad? Because if they do the mission, it's not they get their freedom, you know, whatever. They get $60 million if they do. Or let me phrase that, $50 million. The $60 million comes in later after the six member joins. That's spoilers. So their target for Mockingbird is the immortal menace called Vandal Savage. All right? Their specific mission, they got to infiltrate and destabilize his entire criminal empire. All right? We got some undercover work in this, you know? There's going to be some espionage. There's going to be some tight scrapes, some tight situations. But they gotta play it cool, because Vandal Savage, he ain't no punk. He ain't no buster, all right? He's someone you gotta watch out for. So they go under deep, deep cover into Savage's operation. They're taking out missions for him, including one mission where they break into Bell Rev, okay, and extract his daughter, Scandal Savage. Ho-ho, that's how we get Scandal into the mix. Now, Scandal, she don't like her daddy.
I have a genuine question. Is that really her question, or is that really her name?
Yeah, no, that's her name, Scandal.
I'm not
making up. Yeah, like, that's her name, Scandal.
Oh, it's real.
Yeah, she's a really cool character, honestly. Like, she's fucking awesome, but yeah. Her name's Scandal, daughter of Vandal.
She's never renamed a character, because I feel like that's one that would be like, yeah, let's rename this character. This seems like the right way to go.
She's in need of a rehab, for sure.
Nah, fuck that. her name's Scandal Savage. I'm sticking with it. This is my pitch. All right. Her name's Scandal Savage. We're sticking with it. Maybe that could just be her code name and her real name could be Bridget or something. I don't know. But for intents and purposes for the rest of this pitch, she's Scandal Savage. Anyway, they extract Scandal as one of their missions, you know. She later joins them for the mission to go destabilize the Penguin's operation in Gotham. That's another callback to something that happens in the Secret Six comics. Got a lot of callbacks here, all right? A lot of deep cuts for the fans. So, as they're going on, you know, these top secret undercover missions, which are really just excuses for dope action scenes, you know, there's probably going to be a montage here or there, similar to Captain America the First Avenger. That's when we start getting to know these characters and how they work together, all right? Since he's the only person that the audience will have seen before, we're going to use Deadshot a lot as the POV, sort of, to, you know, justify the exposition of these other characters' backgrounds. You know, it's his first time meeting them. You know, it's our first time meeting them. So then, you know, you see some of these members of the Six, they got some histories with other criminals in Savage's employ. So maybe, you know, Oscar Isaac Catman, he got a little history with Maggie Q Cheshire. That'd be fun for people to see, you know what I'm saying? You know, Bane and Scandal, they really begin to bond in a sort of a fatherly, daughterly situation, because clearly, Scandal, she's got some issues with, you know, Vandal, seeing as how he named her Scandal. You know, that's not the healthiest relationship. She low-key wants him dead. It's not low-key at all, but he refuses to see it because he's immortal. He's like, she can't kill me, whatever. Bane and Scandal, they bond. Jeanette, the Hungarian banshee, who's like practically immortal, she really learns to start embracing life again, you know, and going on these death-defying missions and shit. You know, it's a good emotional arc for her. Karen Gillan would really nail that, I think. Then you got a Ragdoll, just going to be played, as I said, by the tremendous Doug Jones. And he's just really gross. Like, just in general. Like, he contorts a lot. He's icky to look at. He's a freak. He's kind of a pervert. But he doesn't really change. But he learns that, hey, maybe these are the people who can finally accept me. I'm still going to be a murderer and a freak, but, you know, I got my homies with me, so maybe it's all good. Anywho, eventually, you know, they're undercover. It can't last. Savage, too smart for that. Scandal, you know, betrays dear old daddy, joins the Secret Six, and it just leads to an all-out war between the Six and then all of Savage's forces. You know, the aforementioned Cheshire, the Deathstrokes, you know, maybe we get a good Deathstroke Deadshot, you know, one-on-one, similar to Batman war jokes and riddles, you know, and get fun stuff like that. Scandal eventually is the one who manages to kill her father using her patented lamentation blades. She's got, like, Taylor, she's essentially got, like, Assassin's Creed, like, wrist blades. That's kind of her thing. In this, we'll explain that these managed to kill Vandal Savage because they were forged from metals from the meteorite that, you know, gave him his immortality, Andrew, because I'm sure you were wondering, you know, Executive Marlowe, how are you going to kill Vandal Savage? He's immortal. Well, that's how. That's how. And made from the same meteorite, Deus Ex meteorite. There you go.
I'm crossing out one of my questions. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. See, don't try and get one over on me, pal. Anyway, they've accomplished.
How are they going to get back to Krypton without the Rocket, Tristan?
Well, fuck. You got me there. I don't know. Maybe can they go to the Phantom Drive?
Did you write that down, Andrew?
That is an actual question David Goyer got. No.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, so in the end, they've completed the mission. You know, they've done what Mockingbird asked. Mockingbird keeps his end of the bargain, and instead of the $50 million, now that Scandal's joined, bumps it up to $60 million for the Secret Six. And he's like, I'll call you again when I need you. You work for me now. You know, but then we get a little after credit tease of Mockingbird's true identity. And it's one Jesse Eisenberg Lex Luthor. That's right. Ooh. I'm tying it back into the comics, like how the Secret Six worked for Lex during, you know, the lead up to Infinite Crisis, during the Villains United tie-in. We're bringing back Jesse. We're going to give him the chance to do some actual Lex Luthor scheming, being bald, having a suit, not going, every 5 seconds. All right. That's what we want. That's what the people want. We're not doing all that, because he's going to be, you know, voice modulated.
Does Lex have Jolly Ranchers?
He does not have Jolly Ranchers, but...
He's contractually obligated to have Jolly Ranchers, I'm sorry.
Well, okay, that's fine. How about this? As a bonus with the $60 million, he also gives each one of them a different color Jolly Rancher.
I will take it. Continue.
Okay. But that is the general synopsis of how I would have this film going down. We've been through the cast. Any other villains I would throw in there? Like, I think I mentioned Double Down. I mentioned Multiplex. You know, really, we're going to get some random. We're going to get Major Disaster in there, you know, just as a throwaway villain. You know, we can pop on Abracadabra, you know, maybe a little Helgramite, you know, if we're getting naughty. So
you're going to need a sharp saw for these deep cuts, my friend.
Oh, boy, I tell you what, we're going to need some pretty heavy sutures because there's going to be a lot of bleeding.
Like any good executive, and mm-hmm. before we get to Taylor's retort to your pitch, I have notes. Go ahead. I have investors to please. So obviously, Catman is going to need a daughter. That's going to be a thing, and that's
happening. Well, we've still got Deadshot's daughter. That's the thing.
Well, you see, but it sounds like Catman having a daughter would actually hit a target market with both daughters. Can you make that work?
I can make it work because here's the thing. The Catman-Cheshire sort of relationship, she tried to get knocked up by him because she's like, oh, this is the ideal male specimen. My child would be perfect because I am also the perfect woman. So we can have that come to fruition. They could have had a kid.
And he didn't know about it. I will put an asterisk near that saying possibly needs improvement. We'll talk to your agent.
All right. All right.
My next question. You see, we're all about branding here at
Warner. It's all about the brand.
Presents DC Films, presents money, money, please money. And I would like to know, I want to get butts in seats. Things haven't worked out. How about this picture? Suicide Squad presents Secret Six. Can you make it work?
Well, this would tie in to Suicide Squad, just tangentially being related to Deadshot. But here's my fear, Mr. Executive. No shade to you. I have enjoyed the Suicide Squad films for what they were. But let's be honest, though the first one made money, the Suicide Squad, not the most sterling reputation online, we'll say. Would you say that's fair, Mr. Executive?
That's fair. I will give you that.
And James Gunn, The Suicide Squad, an absolute certified banger of a film. I loved it. You loved it. We all loved it. But, and this is largely due to the fact that we're still in a pandemic, it kind of underperformed a little bit, just a tad. I hesitate that titling something Suicide Squad Presents may not necessarily doom it to that same fate, but it would maybe poison the well in terms of, you know, name brand association, because people would think they see Suicide Squad presents Secret Six, like, oh, they're doing it a third time, you know, wasn't one or two enough? You get what I'm saying?
You played that very calmly, and I will allow you to proceed to the next round. Taylor, what is your response and retort to this pitch?
I think there's a lot here that's really good. I really do. I think there's a lot to be said about these outside-the-box ideas. We've seen James Gunn do it with the Suicide Squad and Guardians of the Galaxy. So I don't think that's necessarily a problem. The problem I had with it was the cast. And it's not because of any talent at all. It's because there's a lot of big names that are also attached to do a lot of things. For example, Oscar Isaac right now, dealing with, you know, a Moon Knight series.
Yeah, but this is the world where I'm pitching. Big deal. It doesn't matter.
Plus, you have people like Javier Bardem. You have Karen Gillan, who plays Nebula in the MCU. So I'm not saying that's necessarily like, oh, you can't cross over. I'm saying that's just a lot of money there to go to, just casting alone, for a idea that is somewhat in the realm of Guardians of the Galaxy. Oh, people are going to have to learn who these people are on the fly.
My retort to that is Guardians of the Galaxy had Glenn Close, Vin Diesel, and Bradley Cooper in it. So, you know.
A lot of people didn't have Vin Diesel's in that movie. Yeah. Let's be honest here.
But that doesn't mean he wasn't getting that Vin Diesel money.
It seems the two of you have reached a stalemate at this point. I would like to table this pitch for now, and I would like to turn to my next appointment. I walk down the hall, my assistant is scrambling my notes, and I find a now black boardroom with pictures of The Flash and Wonder Woman plastered along the wall, a long mahogany meeting table, and I find Mr. Taylor Cole at the end here. Sir, you have a minute to continue. What do you have for me?
Oh, this is going to go over a minute, I can guarantee you. But, just want to give a quick synopsis and then go into a what season one would look like here. So, a quick synopsis would be, after being severely beaten and crippled, Bruce Wayne has no choice but to give up the cowl for good. However, in doing this, he creates a dangerous power vacuum in Gotham City. Now, what would season one look like? Season 1 would pretty much be a loose retelling of the Nightfall arc, but with one key difference. Because I know how DC doesn't really want another Batman, unless it's under their terms. So I can play by those rules. Bruce Wayne will never suit up as Batman after the pilot episode. Instead, we see a more exhausted and a more paranoid version of Bruce Wayne. And even when he's briefly shown in the suit, the audience can tell that this is a Batman whose body is breaking down on him. He's burning the candle at both ends. This Batman doesn't kill, though, by the way. He's not the Batfleck. He's just too tired to hold back, as he would in his younger days. Think of it kind of, if you would, Executive Marla, as he's a boxer at the end of his career. All he's doing is throwing haymakers. That's all he has left. Long story short, Batman is tracking down a new potential kingpin in Gotham who has been flooding the streets with a new experimental and extremely lethal drug that is supposed to increase someone's mental and physical abilities. Think of it like a riskier version of the pill in that Limitless movie with Bradley Cooper.
That's a good movie.
It's a good movie. Also, the show was pretty good. Just want to point that out. The show got canceled after one season. Oh, that was really good.
Wasn't it on TNT?
I don't think it was on, like, CBS.
Oh, I need to check it out.
Throughout the first episode, Bruce learns that this new kingpin's name is Bane. Bruce batters dozens of Bane's mercs, but he's unable to figure out where Bane is hiding. Later at the Batcave, Bruce and a still-in-training Tim Drake use their resources to put together a profile on Bane. By the way, while Tim is still in training to be Robin, Bruce still leans on him for research and detective work. Harkening back, I believe, because I'm not a comics person here, to how Tim was brought into the fold in the comics.
It's fairly close.
They end up learning a lot about Bane's past, including being kicked out of his family's criminal organization and briefly hooking up with a cult known as the Order of Saint Dumas. He would violently leave the cult a few years later. But the pair eventually hit a snag when trying to learn more about the drug Bane was working on, called Project Venom. After a few hours of going nowhere, Tim Drake decides to leave for the night, and eventually Bruce finally exits the Batcave to get a few hours of sleep. Just as he leaves the Batcave, he's stopped in his tracks with a right hook. A shot, Bruce looks up to see Bane, who somehow discovered that Bruce Wayne is Batman. This also adds a bit of mystery to the show. How the hell could he have figured it out? From here, we get a fight, if you want to call it that. The experienced Bruce tries every trick in the book to gain the upper hand, but he's just no match for Bane, who seems larger than life. Seems like he's a little inhumanly strong and fast. The first episode ends with the iconic image of Bane holding a bloody and defeated Bruce above his head. Just before sending Bruce's spine into a nearby steel post in the Batcave, the screen cuts to black, and we just hear an unsettling snap. Look, I'm going to be honest with you guys. I didn't have the time or the willingness to go into details outside of that. But before I turn this over to you guys, I do have a bullet point list of a brief, like, way of where all the main characters are going to go from here. If that makes sense.
I'd like to hear it.
Bruce Wayne. So, throughout the season, Bruce's personal arc is really just about him coming to terms with his situation and what he really is without the cowl. It's also about letting his estranged family back into his life and letting go of all that paranoia and guilt he has. But why does he have guilt? You'll find out in a little bit. Next up, we have Dick Grayson and Barbara Gordon. Dick and Barbara retired together and have been living out of Bloodhaven as private investigators. After hearing about Bruce's injuries via Tim Drake, they begrudgingly decide to come back to Gotham for good. Also, these versions of the characters haven't fully moved on from Batman's shadow yet. Dick never became Nightwing, and although Barbara was shot by the Joker, who was killed by Jim Gordon, because he can't have a Joker in this show. So I figured might as well kill him off screen. She was never paralyzed and retired after a short stint as Oracle. Dick and Barbara's arcs are really the heart of the season. They're the reluctant protagonists who discover why they became vigilantes in the first place. They also take very different roads to their new, renewed personas, which are Nightwing and Batgirl. Tim Drake's arc is really just a simple journey of proving himself to Bruce, Dick, and Barbara that he isn't like the last Robin, Jason Todd. Tim is smarter, he's more cautious, he shows more restraint compared to the quick-to-anger Jason Todd. He's out to prove that he can handle the weight of being Robin. Moreover, being a Robin without a Batman. Moving on to my two villains, and then I'll wrap up. We have Azrael. Azrael arrives in Gotham as a vigilante who is murdering Bane's goons. The Bat family eventually discover that Azrael's real name is John Paul Valley, the champion of the Order of St. Dumas. When Bane's victory over Batman reached the Order, they tasked Valley with tracking down Bane and killing him for the latter's betrayal of the Order, including stealing all the research on a new drug the Order was developing, aka the Venom Project. Because they need help to take down Bane, the Bat family decide to work with Azrael under one condition. He can't kill anybody going forward. For a while, this partnership actually works. Azrael begins to gain respect for Bruce and everything he's done for this city. The respect is mutual, by the way. Gotham itself starts to endear itself to Azrael, too. But, when alone, we learn that Azrael has garnered an unhealthy obsession with being the next Batman, as if it was something he believes he was destined for. And finally, to close this out, just want to talk about Bane, the big bad, of course. Bane's story is pretty revenge-based. He and his father were kicked out of their business, wink wink here, after a mutiny. Why? Well, Bane's father was starting to suffer from dementia and was starting to make crucial mistakes, including killing an undercover Argus agent. Bane took the fall for his father, but his father would eventually die while Bane was in prison. How exactly, we don't know. After escaping from prison, Bane would wander the world and eventually come across the Order of St. Dumas and become one of the key figures behind the new Venom Project. Venom's goal was supposed to permanently increase mental and physical abilities, but it was always too dangerous to use on human subjects. So, when the Order tries to shut it down, Bane went rogue, stole all the data on the project, and killed a bunch of cultists on his way out, you know, as you do. Bane settles into Gotham so he can continue to develop Venom and take back his father's organization, who are now stationed in Gotham City. So how would this all end? I have a very quick ending here.
Hit me with
it. The season would end with an epic battle between the Bat family, Azrael, under the influence of Venom, and Venom Bane, where, of course, the Bat family come out on top. After all, this is a superhero show. Bane dies at the hands of Azrael, and Azrael goes to Arkham Asylum, alongside all the criminals he despises so much. The season would officially end with a cliffhanger for next season's big bad, kind of, the Red Hood. This would pretty much be a recreation of the character's introduction in the Under the Red Hood animated series. And that's what I have here, pretty much. I know I went into details on some things and yada yada through others. I just didn't want to take it too much time for you guys.
Which
or
kept
myself
me engaged the entire time.
I too was engaged.
Follow around here. A very dark show you've brought for me, Taylor. A very grim and gritty show. But also, this whole... I'm thinking with my executive cap here, right? How exactly would we show this Venom drug from the comics? Are we thinking making it like really intense and we're going like an effects budget, or can we do some like eye magic physical acting kind of deal? I'm thinking practically here.
I'm thinking a little bit of a mixture between the two. I use Limitless as an example, and I feel like that's a way you could do it. Maybe you could use, because Venom usually is green in nature, so maybe you could use some kind of effects to have the person have a little bit of green on their veins or something like that for at least an extended amount of time. But nothing like the person. Not like Bane is going to grow three times its size.
Damn.
No offense, I always found that to be a little...
Cool it with the Bane slander, alright.
As a fan, I'm hurt. As an executive, I'm wooed by your money-saving capabilities.
That's true, that does save money.
I also would like to know, it looks like, it sounds basically like you said, our focus is kind of Tim, Dick, and Babs, correct?
Yes, to an extent. It's kind of, I went for mixing that storyline that I've heard about Nightfall along with Batman Beyond, because that's something I am pretty familiar with, and Terry McGinnis in that show, and in that storyline, is the main character. But Bruce is a big deal, too. So, while there's no Terry McGinnis, the three other characters, Dick, Barbara, and Tim, would pretty much fill that void with Bruce Wayne pretty much acting how he does, or at least the origin of how he acts in Batman Beyond.
I like it. I'm a big fan of Batman Beyond, so I like where your head's at.
It's a good show.
I want to know a little bit about the, maybe... Just some examples of maybe some visual style you're looking for. What are maybe, who would you want to direct your pilot episode to kind of create a tone?
To create a tone, there was one person, and this is going to be recency bias, that I would want. That would be Drew Goddard. Drew Goddard, I think, understands how to direct something dark enough and something gritty enough while keeping it, I guess, engaging, because there is a time where something can be too dark or too gritty and people just get out of it. For example, Batman versus Superman. So this would be, you look at Daredevil especially, you have this dark, grounded kind of show that has crazy things like ninjas coming back to life that still somehow feels like it's grounded.
I am all for that pick as a big fan of Drew Goddard's work. If you were able to choose where our visual look for Gotham would be, what city would we be shooting in or trying to emulate?
I know how much people love Vancouver.
Vancouver.
Also Atlanta. These days with, what was it, Black Lightning?
There was a lot of Atlanta and Black Lightning, yeah. There's a lot of Georgia State campus in that show.
Yep.
But for the style, I've always liked the Chicago-esque look to it, but at the same time I also enjoy, like, somewhere between that Chicago-esque look and the Dark Knight trilogy and something you would see out of the Batman 89, so some kind of mix between that, because I think with Gotham the big thing is the city feels like a character of itself. Like, you don't want that to be generic, you want it to stand out and not just be a Chicago clone. So of course there'd be a lot of gargoyles, there'd be a lot of new with the old kind of deal.
I like it. I want to turn it over to some reactions and some retorts to Tristan for this pitch.
Now, first of all, let me just go ahead and say, banger. I'm here for it. You know, I love anytime the Bat family gets the bump. You know, anytime we got my man's Dick Grayson leading the charge, I'm here for it. But I got a couple questions, Taylor. Got a couple preguntas for our international listeners. Now, I could have misheard you.
Questions in Spanish.
You know, exactly. Could have misheard you a few minutes ago. But when you were saying that Barbara Gordon and, you know, Dick Grayson would be moving on to their new identities, and you did say new identities, you know, of Nightwing and Batgirl. What was Barbara before then, if Batgirl's a new identity for her?
I would say reformed, because it's, I kind of wanted to imply that because she was shot by the Joker, it kind of had her give up on that and become Oracle for a bit. So it would be that
reclaiming. Okay, gotcha. She's readapt. Gotcha. Okay.
Yes.
Interesting.
Gotcha. Interesting.
And since there is no Joker either, it's one of those things that's like, yeah, you don't get the full satisfaction of that.
But you get the hints.
You have to work with what you
okay.
get.
Okay. I like the ambiguity. Now, my other question is, you and I have talked about this pitch before, because this is a little known fact for listeners out there. This is like the third time we've tried
this
to record
the,
us pitching yes. DC movies. And
which
every
we've
time.
Had audio issues every
yeah,
time. Hopefully
every time.
None in this episode.
It's been a giant L. But this is similar to what you pitched me before. That being said, when you pitched it to me before, I don't think Titans Season 3 had happened yet. And as much as I like your pitch, I'm feeling a lot of similarities with Titans. I feel like Titans stole your idea. Because you did tell me this pretty much this exact idea, like, a month before Titans season 3 started. But with this emphasis,
how so would it be?
There's a lot of emphasis on this, you know, Batman no longer being Batman. We've got Dick and Barbara, you know, taking up the reins in Gotham. You got Tim Drake coming into his own, a new drug on the streets. You know, it's a lot of what Scarecrow did. You know, Red Hood coming in, like you're teasing for your second season. That was obviously a much bigger part of this, you know, latest season of Titans.
If it makes you, I can actually add on to this a mm-hmm. little bit before, because I was okay. thinking about also doing a tease for like, yeah, here's what they could do in season two. Do Under the Red Hood, but instead of having just the Joker, because you can't do that, you could have Scarecrow be someone who was heavily involved in Jason Todd's murder, essentially.
Okay.
And have that be the fill-in for that. But I know that also it goes into Titans season 3
and Arkham Knight,
too. So that's why I wanted to mention it.
That's kind of what
I was basing it off.
I was gonna say a lot of Red Hood in general, a lot of Red Hood Scarecrow connections for some reason. It's odd. It just I'm talking like in the movies and games we've seen. Weird that it's happened twice, but you know, whatever. It's been.
If I had
cool,
a nickel for every time there's a Scarecrow Red Hood connection, I'd have exactly. two nickels. But it's weird it happened twice.
Yeah, it's like, it's not a lot, but it's weird that it happened more than once.
So you're saying why would, or is there any connections between the two?
No, well, no, I know, there's, obviously this would be in a different universe, but it's just, I just feel like Titans Season 3 stole your thunder a little bit, especially in terms of the broken and weary Bruce
Here's
Wayne.
The difference, and this is going to be a little spoiler for Titans, but I'm not going to spoil who it is. Death wouldn't matter. In, you know, this show, death would actually matter.
That's fair.
It's not like 10 people can die and get brought back to life, like happens in season 3, but it would be one of those things where it's not even just dark and broody for the sake of it, it's dark and broody because of a situation. To whereas I feel like Titans, it is kind of the same formula of Dick is an asshole for 10 episodes, he has a dream, he comes back, he learns to be Nightwing. That has happened every season. This would not happen here. It would be literally
it
would probably
point.
Have the Dick Grayson of he's actually bright and he's more outgoing, if that makes any sense.
This
is not the dark and brooding Batman Jr. That could be saved for so many other characters like a Jason Todd.
Okay, because then my other follow-up question was going to be, you know, aside from setting it apart from Titans, which, you know, we touched on the last similarities there, you've got another emphasis of the Bat family coming up with the Gotham Knights series, and then you've got all the other Batman-related spinoffs going on. You know, you have the individual The Batman series, you'll have the spinoff of that, Gotham Central, whatever
they're
calling it.
Something else I kind of thought of as well was, like, it's not just these characters either. Like, you know how Batwoman's done Batwing. And not a lot of people have enjoyed that.
Well, it's because his helmet's giant. It's huge.
You may be able to bring in Man-Bat.
Okay.
As well.
Okay. Who you want playing Man-Bat? Make or break question for me.
That's a very
good
question.
Who's playing my man, Kurt?
Huh.
I'm very intrigued by this.
I stumped him.
you got him.
You stumped me.
It's okay. Think about it, Taylor. It's all good. We're going to go ahead and move on a little bit here. Gentlemen, you've brought some fine pitches. At this point in our bake-off here, I've brought you into one room, right? We're now in a brightly lit top floor of an L.A. skyscraper. I'm giving you coffee and two little
water
bottles.
Are we just in
D.C.'s bottles.
Squid Game?
I was about to say, yeah. Like, are we just about to... Are you going to have us, like, fight to the death?
I'm legally not allowed to answer that question.
Okay, that's fair.
But as we go on...
I swear if I see a doll in the corner of a room saying red light, green light,
let's
I'm
say,
out.
Let's say, Taylor, how tall are you? How much range do I got on you?
Hey, what?
What's that? No, hide the glass floor. Don't break the glass floor. Don't.
Sorry, that was my assistant with a totally unrelated question. Now, gentlemen, I would like to bring you to what I call the secret round of Fanfiction Throwdown.
Ooh, secret round. This is a secret round.
This is a secret. I have three questions for you guys, and I can narrow it down to two for low on time.
Nah, we got time. Let's go.
I like to one at a time here, and then we can do some little retorts. What is the vibe of the score or soundtrack that we're looking at?
Okay. Taylor, you
start
want to
start off
first?
With Taylor this time, yeah.
Taylor, let's go first. There we go. See?
The vibe, do I have to give examples? Because I can't give examples because it would be copying another movie.
You can give vibes.
the vibe would be what they're doing with the Batman. Just straight up that. Because yeah, that is perfect.
That's some good shit.
You want the epic grunge kind of shit with Batman, and that's what it works perfectly with. So just do more of that in this.
A Michael Giacchino meets Nirvana vibe that we're getting from the Batman trailers.
Yes.
All right. Tristan, what do you have for me of a soundtrack vibe?
Oh, I'll tell you who's doing my... Well, are we talking soundtrack or are we talking original score?
Oh, I'm talking both, my friend.
Okay, well, if we're going original score, we got Tyler Bates on the track. Because I want a halfway point between Guardians of the Galaxy and John Wick. That's where my headspace is at with this, you know?
Still in that grungy phase.
In that grungy phase, can get occasionally whimsical, but still, when the shit hits the fan, you're going to get some tasty licks. All right, that he's going full John Wick in the club on some of these moments. In terms of the soundtrack for the movie, we talked a little bit about this before the show. I was teasing y'all with, you know, the general vibe that I would want, and we'd made the point that this is something that the first Suicide Squad did very poorly. But in terms of musical range, I'd like to be able to go from things like Run the Jewels to something older like AC/DC, just not within the same 3-minute time frame where they had 17 songs each taking up 10 seconds, you know, back to back to back. Right. We're not doing that. It'll feel more organic to the story. It'll be more evenly paced, you know, but I don't want to have too much of a dependence on, you know, outside licensed music. You know, if it fits, if it's diegetic to the story, then we can bring it in. But I really want to emphasize Tyler Bates' just sick, nasty score.
I like it. Okay. I like both those answers a lot. That has not helped my choice here at all. Okay. I want to look at if, in the reality, when time constraints and budgets happen, and I come in with my studio and with our scissors and I lock you out of the editing room. If I put a gun to your head and you have to get rid of one major part of your movie, what are you going to fight to keep? What's a major part that you will fight me tooth and claw that will keep your movie the same even when I put my little grubby little Warner Brothers fingers all over it? Your TV show or your movie?
Who's going first, me or Taylor?
Let's go ahead and Taylor, why don't you give at me? See, I have your episode.
So my season? Okay. The one part, I guess, a character, I want to keep Bane the way I kind of want to have him here, because I think Bane is doing, it's something Tristan has coined a lot on this show, cool motive, still murder.
Exactly.
And that's what I think Bane's character is in this. There is sympathy a little bit there, because he's pushed out, his father is pretty much ruined out of pure jealousy, and his father dies and suffers from terrible disease. And that's kind of what Venom's intention is to help with that. Unfortunately, Bane just goes too far. Like, the road to hell is paved with the best intentions. And that's what I kind of was going for there, is he keeps killing, he keeps going down this worse and worse path based on that one dream of fixing this disease.
That is a very well said statement, and you clearly care about how important this villain is to your story. All right, I will keep that intact when I come in and I destroy your vision. Now, Tristan, when I come in and I destroy your vision, what are you going to fight me tooth and nail, almost walk off to keep?
Now, see, Mr. Executive, as I mentioned before, I've watched all the DC movies. I enjoy all of them. And there are plenty of times where I see a lot of the team movies where I'm like, we could have cut this thing out. But then there's plenty of times where I see we're maybe cutting the wrong things. So for my team film, we can't be cutting these character moments where they actually bond. You know, you watch The Suicide Squad and you're like, hey, all right, these people are working together and it seems like they're finally getting along. Then you get to the climax when El Diablo says he's already lost one family, he can't lose another. That was rushed. It was unearned. We didn't see the buildup. So for my film, we got to have these little moments of humanity between these characters, not to necessarily redeem them, but just to justify why they would still stick together, even though they are pieces of shit. And not in the fun Guardians of the Galaxy way, but in the no, these people are all going to hell sort of way. Now, if that comes at the expense of, you know, some of the side villains, like, hey, maybe we don't get my little, you know, Mad Hatter scene. Maybe we don't see Double Down. Maybe we cut, we shave off a little bit of Deathstroke and Cheshire outside the action scenes, you know? That's a conversation we could have. I would say that, you know, Cheshire's relationship with Catman, it's, you know, it's that daughter that you wanted. You were asking for that. So maybe be wary of that. But we can shave down the villains a little bit, because at the end of the day, as amazing a character as Vandal Savage is, he's a target for the Secret Six. The movie is titled The Secret Six. It's not titled Vandal Savage and his, you know, secret society of supervillains. So as long as we maintain those character moments, that'll help the audience get attached to them, and it'll make the action scenes that much more rewarding, because we'll actually give a shit about what these characters are doing.
All right, I like that answer. I feel like I can probably go ahead and cut this third question, because I want to get into, after I've vetted you guys a little bit, after I'm listening to both pitches, and I haven't made quite a decision yet, but I want to keep hearing how married you are to this project, to this idea. You now have more caffeine thrown in front of you. Maybe a sugar high is getting you. Close this out for me. Show me what you got for me. Let's start with Tristan.
I'm sorry, I'll be honest. You kind of cut out for a few seconds there. I didn't hear anything.
Oh, my bad. just saying. Go ahead and close it out for me.
Look, here's the deal, people. We like violence. We like comedy. We like fun team moments. And we like Oscar Isaac, okay? And there's only one film that's been pitched today that has all those things, mainly the Oscar Isaac. And that is The Secret Six, okay? It's a rollicking...
That's also because I'm doing a series.
Well, it's also because you're doing a series, but that's neither here nor is it there, Taylor. Stay over there in Gotham, okay, with the seven other Batman-related projects we have, all right? I'm bringing in The Secret Six. I got Oscar. I got Will. I got Laz. I got Sophia. I got Doug. I got Karen. I got Javier. Okay, and then we're bringing back Jesse Eisenberg to redeem him in the eyes of the audience, not in terms of being a character, but in terms of having people actually like the portrayal. We're bringing back, you know, Joe Manganiello. We're bringing in Maggie Q. Maggie got dang Q. Who doesn't love Maggie Q? Who doesn't love Nikita? Okay, we got some freaks out there who are just dying to see themselves represented in Ragdoll and Jeanette. All right, we got some sexy bisexual kings looking for representation in Oscar Isaac's Catman. We got some black fathers looking for representation in Deadshot, because apparently they didn't get it in, you know, Idris Elba's Bloodsport, who didn't get it from Will Smith's Deadshot again. All right, you got all the demographics right here.
Strong words and big confidence. Taylor, close me out of why I should pick your pitch.
Well, I think there's two words I could say. The Mandalorian. And that's what this show could be for HBO Max. Because in 2022 and beyond, movies aren't going to be on HBO Max. They're going back to that Wild West known as theaters. So I feel like at some point HBO Max will need these exclusive projects. And unlike my opponent, I do not interfere with whatever you have going on. I feel like my opponent's does, because bringing in these other characters who have been shown before, like Lex Luthor and Deathstroke, who knows what you have going on? I wasn't here to even imply you did or didn't. I just had my own standalone idea. And also, I don't know if you plan to use Vandal Savage in the future. Here's the thing. I know Legends of Tomorrow kind of painted him in a light that was like, man, this guy is not a big deal. And I love me some Legends of Tomorrow. But it wasn't that season, I can guarantee you that.
Yeah. Nor should it be. Nor should it be.
But Vandal Savage is a big deal. He is a Justice League level threat. So as much as I believe my opponent's idea is excellent, I could foresee that running into your plans, because we know, of course, DC and Warner Brothers, if there's one thing that they love so much, it's making plans. And I say that with absolutely no sarcasm.
That seemed disrespectful, executive. Seemed like he was slandering your prestigious
studio. I said
studio.
It was absolutely no sarcasm.
Well, so I take it at face value of what he says. Gentlemen, you've both given me incredible pitches, incredible ideas. I'd like to have my closing statements now before my final verdict.
Please, Your Honor, please.
Tristan, your idea is daring. It's fun. There's a lot going on. It has a feel, a grunge. Only thing is, I'm not sure about Tim Miller. His last movie wasn't really a hit, and I'm not sure if he's a guy we can work with. But I like the idea of having of that same idea of D-listers fighting someone we can maybe rehab as a villain.
And the that's
is a big the cast is a big bill though. I'm gonna throw that at you.
Okay. Okay. Well, again, these were suggestions for character archetypes. The only two that I will die on the hill for: Will Smith, bring him back as Deadshot. People love Will Smith, and Oscar Isaac. You yourself said Oscar Isaac. That's money. That's money. True. And think about it this way: you may say, "Well, he's playing Moon Knight." Well, I raise you this: Moon Knight, as far as I know, at least in the MCU, gonna be straight. Oscar Isaac really wanted some queer representation in Star Wars and didn't get it. Disney's already let him down when it comes to that queer representation. Catman is a bisexual king, and he can bring that to the big screen.
And we're all about doing reactionary representation when it gives exactly. us money and clout.
Exactly. And he's a man of color? Come on. Come
That's
on
That's true. All right, Taylor, you gave me what you pitched as DC's The Mandalorian. Something that is epic in scope, dark in tone, and can kind of hit those four quadrants Daddy really wants to hit. You know what I'm saying? I gotta get that money. I gotta get those subscribers, too. You've given me a cast that I can afford. You've given me arcs that I like. In a word, in a world that I have dabbled in a lot, though. I have to say that. But with another good yet unproven as much as Tim Miller in Drew Goddard, who I adore. Both are solid and both have their ups and downs. And gentlemen, it is time for my final verdict. It's time for me to bring out the checkbook and write someone's name on it. I want to bring around, talk to you both one last time. Again, Taylor, familiar, but bold. Safe, but daring. Something I could play with a lot. And it has my favorite word in the money-making language, Batman.
Does have Batman in it. He's got me there. He's got me there.
Tristan, you have a daring idea. A fun idea. Individual. A director vision that can be sort of a romp. It can be serious. It has themes, thematic elements. A villain I can use later. But there's no fucking Batman in that, baby. Taylor, you got it this time, baby.
Ugh. I knew I was coming at an uphill battle the moment he said his nightfall pitch. I was like, you son of a bitch. You told me you were going to be using a new pitch. You gave me this pitch before. If I'd known
that... No, I said I wasn't using the Flash one.
Yeah, but you used both. I should have gone Justice League International. This is a hate crime to anyone who wants something that's not Batman for more than 5 minutes, all right?
Papa's got to make his money.
Papa does have to make his money, but guess what, Papa? Guess what? People are going to stop. Yeah, I can't even say people are going to stop paying money for Batman because it's Batman. But they're just going to see this
Batman
on HBO Max.
Making money, my friend.
And they're going to see, oh, it's just Titans again. This is outlandish. This is just an egregious offense. And
Welcome
I stand,
to Hollywood, baby. It's hard
I
out
stand,
here in these streets.
You know what? This is Hollywood because you took the idea of a minority and you ignored it. Yeah, I went there.
Damn, he's got me there.
And now I'm going to go tweet about it, and we're going to get a Restore the Bins cut, and we're gonna do a Secret Six fan film, all right? I'm getting this shit done somehow. Oscar Isaac, call me.
And then in 2 years, we'll go ahead and release your movies so to boost subscribers more. Don't worry about it. I got
Damn
you.
Right.
Taylor, you have won. Close us out with your blank check Batman Nightfall series. It has to be called Batman Presents or Gotham Presents or Titans Present Nightfall, though. That is my only stipulation.
What about all three? Batman Gotham Knights Presents Titans.
Batman's Gotham Knights Titans Presents Nightfall TM on HBO Max Original.
I don't think this was worth it.
You have burned a bridge today, Taylor Cole.
Okay, I'm going to try to close this out. I can't believe Tristan went where he went.
I do what it takes.
All right, well, here's the one thing he did. He did mention that was true, by the way. This is kind of my opportunity to kind of give my thanks and condolences and everything. Condolence 5 from far away there, Tristan. But here's the one thing he said, though. And I kind of have a retort to it. It was like, yeah, this is going to be another Batman thing, whatever. But if they were to kind of do something like a freeform Bat Family deal, it would finally give Titans room to get the fuck away from it.
He's got me there. Once. He's got me there.
He's got a good point.
That's a good point. History, I didn't consider that.
It would give the Flash a chance to have a Flash movie without two Batman.
Well, hold on.
Keep in mind, I love me some nostalgia. Don't get me wrong. I'm pretty sure I will enjoy the Flash movie when it comes out. But there is something to be said that the first solo Flash movie we're getting is all about Batman.
Well, see, now, hold on. I got a question here. You're saying this series would let people get away from the Batman stuff. So that makes it sound like you're... It would give them an out.
Chance to go, we have, like, hey, all right, we got our money-making cow. We got this thing. We have Robert Pattinson's Batman. We got whatever the hell we're doing with Michael Keaton. And we're just going to leave it at that.
Okay. Because the way...
There's no more Jorah Mormont playing Bruce Wayne.
Sign your contract before you read the fine print, please. Just real quick.
I should have pitched Justice League International with Michael Keaton, Batman.
Hypothetically, if you could just sign this without reading it, that'd be great.
This is what I get for being a man of honor and not playing on Andrew's love for post-crisis DC. I will not make this same mistake again, Taylor.
I'm a big fan of post-crisis boys.
Taylor, you have now made... Here's the thing. We're friends. We're pals. We're partners in podcasting. But from now on, when it comes to Clash of the Stash, as the once and future king of the Clash, I will be king again. I will show no mercy. I will play as dirty as I need to secure that dub, to secure that bag, as it were. I'm no longer going along to get along, all right? I'm making statements from here on out.
Fighting words.
Oh my god, this is fantastic. All right, so I guess I'm closing out this show.
Close it out, baby.
Sign a fake contract.
Can't spell closer without a loser, as you are, Taylor.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
All right, that one also went across the line. I'm sorry.
You will be filming in an Atlanta backlot. Don't worry.
It's supposed to be my time here, Tristan.
You're right.
Winter time. You know what? I'm going to be the asshole here.
Go ahead. You earned it.
My opponent.
You're welcome.
Very much for a great argument here. But no, I thought this was fantastic. So let's close up shop.
No, straight up, you did have a great pitch though. It sounds really good.
I loved it. Fantastic, honestly. Yeah. Like
I loved it the first time you pitched it to me, and I really like what you went back and added with like the Bane angle and like connecting him to the Order of Saint Damaso. That was really cool.
Yeah, both were fantastic, and if I could have chosen both, I definitely would have.
All right, so let's talk about what we're working on and where can people find you, Tristan. What are you working on? Where can people find you? Are you already working on next month's Clash? Well, we're not doing one for December. Are we working on January's Clash of the Stash?
We said what January's Clash of the Stash was going to be yet?
No, we did not.
I was about to say.
We'll come up with something like 3 days before we
do. I was about to say, when we come up with it, then I'll get to work on it. But in the meantime, you can find me over at Screen Rant, just once again, pumping out the content. You want to know why Kang deserves the title of Infinity War over Thanos? Well, spoiler alert, it's because he likes to time travel. You want to know, like, what's up with Miles Morales in the Marvel Comics universe and how them just acting like they treat him as the real Spider-Man isn't enough and they should actually do it and put their money where their mouth is? Go on to my page on Screen Rant and find out. Give me the views. I need the money. Please, for the love of Christ. I've got to, like, finance all of my campaigns against Taylor for the next Clash of the Stash. Come on, help a brother out.
Andrew, where can people find you and what are you working on at the moment?
Follow my musings and ramblings on Twitter at Mr. Brodo Baggins. I talk about movies, comic books. I'm super into Dune right now, so I'm tweeting a lot about
that. Oh, hell yeah.
I've been full-time school and working, so I'm not working on much, but shout out to, I directed a music video for my buddies over at Dinner Time for their band. So follow Dinner Time USA on Instagram. You will find my music video down the way for the song What's the Deal. Super proud of that fucking video, and I hope more collaborations come on the way.
That's what we like to hear, King. Talk your shit.
All right. Be sure to do all that. And I guess what I'm working on is both this podcast and the Nerd Stash Show, our gaming podcast. On the last episode of the Nerd Stash Show, we talked about Call of Duty Vanguard releasing. We were talking about Take Two canceling a new game that cost them, I believe, $53 million. Good God.
That's a lot of money.
We also had a larger conversations about, about next gen consoles. And there's been a little bit of talk here lately, I've noticed, where people have been like, is it time to move on? Like, is it time for developers to, you know, drop the Xbox One and PS4 versions of the games? And also, here's something to point out here. A lot of people haven't been able to get their hands on next-gen consoles.
It's factual.
So we kind of tried to look at both sides of the argument here, and I thought we had a great conversation about it all. But anyways, I want to thank both my co-hosts for joining me this week. I want to thank everyone for listening. We will be back next week to talk about, I believe, don't quote me on this, we're taking a little bit of a break from Daredevil. It's retrospectives. Unfortunately, we probably won't get back to it till 2022.
I got a lot of play here. Got a lot going on.
But I believe the next episode will be a Spider-Man web retrospective. It might just be talking about Into the Spider-Verse, I think. I don't know.
Damn good movie.
I'll have to see.
Damn good
movie. But we will definitely have some kind of episode for you guys to listen to. I guess we'll see you next week.